interest on obligations already incurred could be seriously undermined.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamu alaikum.
My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
As for today, we're going to talk about something which is the problem of many, I guess.
Yeah.
Obesity.
More than half of the world.
Really?
Yeah.
So obesity is something that exists everywhere. I mean, every single one must suffer from that at a specific phase of their life, at a specific age. And I guess women are more concerned, right?
You know what? I think the most problem that the people with obesity will face is the wrong social feedback they're going to face in the society.
True.
You know, it is really difficult for them because it will lead them to a road of, I don't know, lack of self-esteem, self-satisfaction, and self-confidence, and so on. And this is a main problem because they lose their self-confidence. They think that they cannot be, seen or slim again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't go for that. They don't try. You know, they just give up with the way they are.
That's very true.
And they hate themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly.
And you know, it has been exaggerated recently.
You know what? Because of the social medias, I think, then this is the main point. We have celebrities with beautiful body shapes and so on. And, you know, they are idealizing a kind of way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to follow that.
Exactly.
If you don't, you are not accepted by the society.
Yeah. Now, Brother Muzaffar, there comes a question. Hmm. I always ask myself, what if all the models were so fat and chubby?
That would definitely have an impact on the society and people would start to idolize that and become fat and chubby themselves.
You know, what is the main concern of this question? I just want to know if there exists such a thing as thin and fat.
These people used to idolize that because it's a symbol of wealth. It's a symbol of... Now, this person is well-to-do and therefore...
But speaking of the museums of the Roman people and the Greek people, then also the statue they have in the museums, they are thin as well.
They, because, well, first of all, when it comes to beauty standards, they're usually unhealthy, and especially in modern times, or they're average. But when it comes to male beauty standards, they're actually really good to aspire to. The male standard for beauty, like the muscular type, it's making a man look stronger and it's making a man more healthy and fit. Those are all good things. We should strive to be like that.
Yeah, exactly.
For women, it's not always the same.
Exactly.
They'll either be idolizing, like in past generations, if we assume that they idolize really fat women, that's not good to aspire to. And, or in today's time where you have, you know, the size zero, the very, very ridiculously skinny, like Keira
Knightley, bunch of bones,
Emma Watson types. And it's like, well, that's just anorexic. But lots of young girls do aspire to that and they end up becoming bulimic, which is, you know, when they actually have a meal and then they mm-hmm. vomit it out yeah, because they feel guilty about it. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely going to have bad repercussions in societies.
Yeah, that's very true. But it happens to every single one of us as girls. I would talk of the girls.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me, right? Because I'm going to see like superheroes and athletes and be like, yeah, I want to be like that too.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing.
For you guys, you're going to see like really skinny models and be like, mm-hmm. I want to be like that. But that's not a good thing
to
be.
To some extent, I do not agree with what he's telling. Guys.
Put your debate right in here. Let's go for a break and then we'll pursue it. Sister Bida, we are just talking about obesity, exactly. And you were saying something, and I was sorry to interrupt you.
Brother Muzaffar, talking like, okay, if you're gonna go through the modeling industry, and you can see, I don't know, the male models that are so muscular and so on, you can follow them because it's a model of being healthy.
Yeah.
I do not agree with that because, you know, they use drugs, they use, I don't know.
Not all of them.
I know not all of them. But, you know.
No, we're not talking about lifestyle. We're just talking about the body.
Yeah, the kgs.
So it's the same for the female one. You know, I mean, there is no paradoxical content like that. Okay, the female ones are so skinny that are unhealthy, mm-hmm. and the male one are so, I don't know, muscular that is healthy. I mean, this is not like that.
No, the main idea is that the perfect shape is going to make you healthier.
Yeah.
For men, it's going to make you healthier. For women, it's not about health. It's about attractiveness.
To some extent, because nowadays all the models are just skinny.
Yeah, exactly. Why? It's not because it's good for the woman.
Because they have been through too much of illnesses.
It doesn't make the woman stronger, fitter, healthier. Yeah. It just makes her more attractive to men.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
Whereas for males, it's always been the same. You mentioned ancient Greece, ancient Rome. Yeah. It's always those statues of muscular men. There's nothing wrong with that, you see? You can argue about how we shouldn't be portraying those mm-hmm. images everywhere and stuff like that, but that's a separate discussion. The idea here, though, is that the male beauty standard is not unhealthy, whereas the female beauty standard sometimes is.
But there's also another point. As these little girls are going through Instagram or other parts of social media, then they start to think that skinny girls are more attractive, and they would start that sort of lifestyle from the age when they are so young, and from the age when they must love too much of chocolate that they have to ignore it. But they have to care about special details in whatever they eat just because the society wants them to be like this.
Yeah,
which is so cruel.
But this is the opposite. As well, right? There's the opposite where we shouldn't be obese either. You know, obesity is a terrible thing.
That's another issue, you know?
There should be a balance here.
There should be a balance,
But the thing is, if we are going to go extreme in being beautiful, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're searching for this beauty and show our
perfect, you know? Exactly, all of them show this perfect picture of a woman, which does not exist. Because beauty is the skin, of course. Yeah. It's not just a picture. Because if you go through between the lines of the life of these people, then you would see that it's not just the picture. There are some other things that matter more, which are not going to be displayed in front of other people or in the social pages.
Even in social pages, we have many Photoshop and so on.
Exactly.
I mean, this perfection of them is not really perfect. Exactly.
It's not
even
realistic.
In the real world, you know. And I don't know, but at the age of going through the heavy diets is about 10 years old in girls in the United States. And I read this.
Wow, heavy diets in 10 years.
This is, I don't know, destructive in my opinion.
Yeah.
America have to
like
solve this problem.
The worst example for obesity, isn't it? It's just the false food diet and the accessibility of snacks and how expensive healthy food is in comparison.
Yeah.
It's just ruined the entire society and made them all really, really fat. Mm-hmm. They're just fat, like horribly fat.
Yeah. So if we want to talk about what is going on right now in social media, then this is not true. To just create a personality, or let's just say a form, a body that is just attractive be it healthy or unhealthy, both ways, since you are just bothering yourself, it's not the true thing.
See, there's another extreme as well, where there's been this fat culture.
In today's episode, we're just going to talk about obesity, the kind of obesity that is bad for your health, not the kind of obesity. Well,
that's what I wanted to talk about. So there was this talk show where these fat acceptance people were coming on board, and they are very obese women. Like, and I'm talking about like they not get, you know. And she was adamantly arguing on this talk show, and she was saying, "Look, I was born this way, and this is genetics, and there is nothing I can do to change it."
Oh.
And another lady, just equally as fat, she was saying, "You know, I can choose to be whatever body shape, and I am perfectly healthy. I've never been to the doctor." And she actually died, like, of a heart attack a few days or a few weeks after the filming of that. But this is also being pushed. You shouldn't be just, oh, you know what? I am perfect. The way I am is perfect. And you know what? Yeah. If you don't like it, then you should just learn to accept me the way I am. This this whole attitude is an onset of the whole LGBT kind of movement. Yeah. Accept me the way I am. No. Human beings should aspire to be better.
And should take care of themselves.
They should take care of themselves physically.
The body is a benefit and a blessing. We have to take care of it. And the way we thank God is just to keep it healthy.
But let me add something here. You know, there is a group of people with, I don't know, obese, really obese body shape, that they have some, diseases. And, you know, other, actually root of their obesity is disease.
Yeah, that's also very true.
Not only genetics, hormones and so on will affect this obesity. And actually, we cannot blame them because they cannot change their body shape.
Exactly. Yeah, I know that. And I have seen some people like that. And it's very, very sad. Yeah. So let's go listen to something and then we will be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're still in Back to Reality, and Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar are helping us with obesity.
Yeah.
I understand that part of it is to do with genetics and they might have a disease and stuff, but it's physically impossible to maintain that weight of an obese person unless you're eating a lot of calories.
No, it's not just Sometimes
it's
about
impossible.
The metabolism of your cells and so on.
But then what about somebody who's morbidly obese and they're saying, you know, I cannot help it. And in the meantime, they're having like double cheeseburgers.
No, that's another story, really.
Yeah.
It's about eating and laziness.
But that is unfortunately the case.
Well, you know what? Even craving for too much of food is not a sign of the fact that you're healthy. That means you have a problem, hormonal problem, and you have to go to doctor.
Maybe, yeah.
So I have seen such examples as well. Even the craving for food is not in their hand.
Yeah, they cannot control
that. They have
that.
It unconsciously, and they cannot control it, really.
Are you ready for this, guys?
Yes.
Eat less, exercise. Genius.
That's it. You solved it.
Genius, right?
Is there any way aside from exercise?
I don't think so. Yeah,
being thin and then you turn thin. That would have been so beautiful.
No, actually,
I was thin and I turned thin.
No, I just think about being thin and
you
then
are
I would
thin.
Turn thin.
No, that doesn't work.
Just sit in your place
as an
obese person.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And then think, I want to be thin.
You have to change your life.
Yeah, that's very true.
It is really
important. I would say, first of all, we have to meet a doctor.
No, I do not agree with that because not all the doctors are that
perfect. What are you going to say? Doctor, I'm fat. What's he going to say?
The doctors that can help you and give you advice about the nutrition that you would get from a smaller amount of food that you're going to have.
A nutritionist.
Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, if you don't change your mindset and lifestyle, it won't help for a long time, at least, you know.
Yeah,
just don't think about adding a beauty model and so on. Just health, and that's it.
I was just thinking about this theoretical fat person at the doctor, right? Yeah. And he says, oh, I'm fat. Can you fix me? And he says, how did you get here?
Yes,
and he
they
says,
can fix them. They do a lot of surgeries.
Liposuction
right
exists.
Yeah. Nowadays, it can help them a lot.
We're not talking about that, right?
So this happens in real life. They go there. This dialogue happens in real life. They go there. They say, I'm fat. Can you fix me? And then they say, yes, we can fix you. And then they go through a lot of surgeries. And then sometimes they would even hurt them.
But then because of the lifestyle, they're just going to become fat again.
Who is going to spend that much of money is going to change their lifestyle.
After, I don't know, maybe 5 years, they will again become fat. I saw that. Mm. Yeah.
See?
In my relatives.
It's all about lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In mindset.
So first of all, you have to change your mentality, your lifestyle.
And then your physical.
And then you can visit a doctor, get some advices. And then the most important part is to have exercise. And I don't know, have a special plan for your eating.
And a healthy diet.
And a healthy diet, yeah, that's very true. So this is all the time that we had for today's episode. Thank you, brother, and thank you, sister, and thank you, dear listeners of Factor Reality. Until another episode, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim. يا ربي لدي أمار عزك يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك لتصي دليلتك once again.
The very first revolution that started with the people continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
جانم تپشم سخنم باشد وطنم وطنم ای خان که گوهر خیز بهره وطنم قدمم عشقم سخنم قسمم از عاشقی لبری.
Congratulations on the victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The U.S. announced on January 25th that it will send 31 M1 Abrams tanks to Ukraine. The tanks may take months or even years to arrive and may never see the battlefield. The M1 Abrams is the main battle tank of the U.S. military and is one of the most powerful and sophisticated tanks in the world. But for Ukraine, that is both the advantage and the problem. In his comments announcing the decision, U.S. President Joe Biden said that delivering the tanks to Ukraine will take time without further specification.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States will be sending 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine, the equivalent of one Ukrainian battalion. Secretary Austin has recommended this step because it will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives. The Abrams tanks are the most capable tanks in the world. They're also extremely complex to operate and maintain. So we're also giving Ukraine the parts and equipment necessary to effectively sustain these tanks on the battlefield.
Military analysts say it could take a year or more for all these Abrams to make it to Ukraine. So any expectations that these tanks will have an immediate impact on the fighting needs to be tempered. The tanks will be purchased from General Dynamics, the manufacturer of the tank. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said it will take many months for General Dynamics to build them. Kirby said the U.S. doesn't have the extra tanks in its arsenal, and even if there were excess tanks, it would still take many months, suggesting that the unbuilt tanks will take even longer to arrive. While the estimated timeline suggests that the tanks cannot have an immediate impact on the conflict, it seems that may never have been the intention. The decision may have been more strategic and diplomatic than military. The Biden administration made the decision against the advice of the Pentagon. The tank the U.S. really wants on the battlefields of Ukraine is the German Leopard 2. But Germany was never going to send them without the cover of the U.S. agreeing to send their tanks. In case there was any doubt, on January 19th, at the World Economic Forum, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz privately but very directly told the U.S. delegation that Germany was not going to send their tanks until the U.S. agreed to send theirs. The U.S. may never have intended the Abrams tanks for the current war. They may not even be the right tanks for this war. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley had both recommended against sending M1 Abrams tanks to Ukraine. In addition to how long it takes to train personnel to operate the tanks and how difficult the tanks are to maintain, they have also said that the Abrams tanks are not the right vehicles for the fight in Ukraine right now. By promising to send the tanks without ever specifying a delivery date, the U.S. may have succeeded in giving Germany and Europe cover to send their Leopard tanks without ever actually sending U.S. tanks onto the current battlefield. Most NATO members in Europe have kept open the possibility of sending their F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, even as U.S. President Joe Biden said Washington would not do so. Air defense experts say U.S.-built F-16 fighter jets would offer Ukraine an edge over the Russian Air Force, but only if combined with powerful missiles and targeting information which the West would also have to provide, drawing it more actively into the war. There are clear advantages to the F-16. It is the world's most produced fighter jet, with many being decommissioned in Europe as NATO members transition to the F-35. Lockheed Martin, which produces the F-16, told the Financial Times it can increase production to replace planes sent to Ukraine. But there are practical and symbolic concerns. Experts say training Ukrainian pilots on F-16s might not be carried out in time to make a difference in the war this year. Also, bringing in Western pilots, even as privateers, could create political complications. Ukraine has reportedly prepared a batch of 50 pilots who have flown in Western military exercises and could be trained in 3 months. The symbolic concern is over losses of aircraft. Russia's development of hypersonic missiles could prove a match for the F-16, ending the narrative of NATO superiority. Perhaps for such reasons, there are still naysayers in the Western alliance. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, after bowing to pressure to send Leopard 2 battle tanks to Ukraine, said he would not be sending the jets. The West, the U.S. in particular, has supplied Ukraine with arms and munitions worth billions of dollars since the beginning of the war in February last year. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has recently doubled down on the need for new weapons from his Western backers to counter Russia's military advances, urging the West to send long-range missiles and fighter jets in addition to tanks.
We have to open the supply of long-range missiles to Ukraine, and it is important that we expand our cooperation in artillery, and we have to start supplying aircraft to Ukraine. This is our dream and our task.
Russia has frequently warned that Western weapons supply to Ukraine will only prolong the war.
Mm-hmm.
While the British public is grappling with an unprecedented cost of living crisis, the dismissal of a high-ranking Tory official has added insult to the injury of millions of Britons. That after it emerged that chairman of the Conservative Party, Nadeem Zahawi, paid a penalty to HM Revenue and Customs over previously unpaid tax as part of a multi-million pound dispute while he was Chancellor. HM Revenue and Customs is a non-ministerial department of the UK government responsible for collecting taxes. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak was quick to react to save his party from yet another scandal. He fired Zahawi for what he called serious breaches of the ministerial code over his tax affairs. An investigation by Sunak's ethics advisor concluded that Zahawi had broken the rules by repeatedly failing to declare an HMRC probe into his tax affairs. The dispute concluded with a £5 million settlement, including a penalty. But on Sunday, Sunak sent a letter to Zahawi saying his ethic advisor had concluded there was, quote, a serious breach of the ministerial code. In the letter, Sunak also announced his removal from the post. The dismissal came as Sunak was under fire himself for initially standing by Zahawi before ordering an internal investigation. But the Premier defended his stance, arguing that integrity in politics was the reason he did not sack the Tory chairman in time.
I think that's the right thing to do, to ensure that we have integrity in politics, but to do that in a professional way, that's what we're doing.
But many Britons remain unsatisfied with Sunak's handling of the issue. They reason out that the Prime Minister, who acted within hours over his advisor's report, should have sacked Zahawi earlier.
Well, Nadeem Zahawi obviously should be thinking about his future, but I think the bigger question here is why the Prime Minister didn't act earlier, what he knew about this situation, and why he seems to be continuously putting the interests of his party above those of his country. He knew there were allegations about Zahawi for a long time. He then knew that Zahawi had been negotiating a deal with HMRC at the same time as he was in charge of HMRC as the Chancellor. So I think the biggest question today isn't actually for Zahawi, it's actually for the Prime Minister.
Sunak also faces scrutiny over whether he knew about the minister's tax affairs and when he was told there could be a reputational risk to the government after Zahawi's appointment in October. Now many, including former high-ranking officials, suggest that Sunak's premiership risks being brought down by scandals swirling around the Tories. One such is high-stakes parliamentary inquiry into whether Sunak's predecessor Boris Johnson misled lawmakers over Partygate. The sacking of Nadeem Zahawi comes as Sunak's government facing decades-high inflation and a wave of public sector strike while trailing badly in opinion polls ahead of an expected 2024 election. To many, the tax evasion of Zahawi has not come as a surprise, but for a prime minister who promised accountability, professionalism and integrity while taking office, this is just a disgrace. But what happens when governments, especially in so-called first world countries, are submerged in corruption? Many argue that politics in those countries are too chaotic to the point where things get out of hand, like what happened in the case of Zahawi. So the ironic situation is when a man briefly in charge of the treasury does not pay taxes himself while insisting that others must pay. Apart from that, the UK is already grappling with a cost of living crisis which has been unprecedented in a century. This, coupled with the skyrocketing inflation, have so far prompted hundreds of thousands of workers from various sectors, including railway, postal, dock, energy and medical, to stage walkouts over pay and working conditions. While workers' union accuse the government of inaction and call for talks to resolve the disputes, workers want their pay in line with the inflation that is currently at the level of nearly 11%. The UK is also facing rampant food and energy costs. Some even struggle to make ends meet or even afford to put food on the table.
There's people around here who can't afford to put clothes on their kids' backs or food on their table, and that he has mistakenly missed an error.
Charities are stocking up duvets, sleeping bags, hot water bottles, and blankets because they know that people can't afford to heat their homes anymore. That puts in the spotlight the number of governments which one after another took the helm at number 10 and attempted to resolve the cost of living crisis, but to no avail. The much bigger question is that how can the Sunak government run the country when it is unable to cope with this and other crises happening over there? The situation in Israeli-occupied East Al-Quds remains volatile after a number of shooting operations there took the lives of at least 9 people and wounded several others. In the latest incident, 2 Israelis were wounded in an operation in the Silwan neighborhood of Al-Quds on Saturday morning. The Israeli Emergency Medical Services said one of those injured was in critical condition. The shooter, identified as a 13-year-old Palestinian, was wounded. The incident was the second Palestinian operation in Al-Quds in less than a day. On Friday, at least 7 people were killed and several others wounded in a shooting operation outside a synagogue in the Israeli-occupied East Al-Quds. Resistance movements hailed the operation. The Al-Quds Brigades, which is the military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement, praised the attack as a courageous operation. It said the attack was a natural response to the Israeli occupation and the regime's crimes against Palestinians. The Al-Quds Brigades said the operation is a testament to unity among resistance groups. Hamas also lauded the operation. The movement said the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will pay the price for any new mistake that Tel Aviv could make. Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarullah movement also separately praised the action. The Friday incident followed a Thursday Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank, where at least 10 Palestinians were killed in cold blood by Israeli troops. Thursday marked the deadliest day for the Palestinians since the start of the new year. Israeli troops barred medical teams from reaching the area. Regime forces also stormed a hospital in Jenin and intentionally fired tear gas towards its pediatrics department. Separately, Israeli forces demolished a sports club in the refugee camp. All what is going on in the occupied territories is happening in the silence of the international community. The mainstream media closed its eyes to the deadliest Israeli raid on the Palestinian community in the occupied land this year, and instead, they took the side of the Israelis in the recent tensions. From the United States to Germany, to France and Ukraine, almost everyone expressed concern about the lives of Israelis during the recent violence. The storming of the Jenin refugee camp is indicative of the regime's aggressive nature in dealing with Palestinians, especially since the emergence of extremist ideologies in the Israeli cabinet. Many argue that the current Israeli cabinet is the most extremist ever since its installation in the occupied land. What highlights this extremism is the recent storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. Many brand the minister's move as the root cause of all the recent tensions between Israelis and the Palestinians in the occupied territories. The latest flare-up of Israeli violence in the occupied West Bank brings to the question the regime's motive behind such escalations. One presumption is that the regime is only after taking out the total Palestinian identity from their land. In order to do that, what could be better than suppressing them by imposing an all-out blockade on millions of Palestinians and blocking their access to the outer world? To support that presumption, it is enough to say that the Israeli cabinet is planning to deport Palestinian families, at least those who the regime deems as terrorists, from their own land. That's why it pushes ahead with its policy of demolishing Palestinian homes. Many are convinced that this amounts to utter collective punishment and ethnic cleansing. There is no doubt that what the Israeli regime is doing now in the occupied land, in terms of demolition and other practices, will definitely backfire. What could be around the corner for the Israeli occupying regime is yet another intifada waiting to happen. After all, Palestinian resistance has entered a new phase and so many young people are taking part in the operations against the Israeli regime. Grassroots Palestinians with no affiliation to any of the resistance groups are rising against the regime like the Den of Lions. The Den of Lions is an independent armed Palestinian group operating in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. The group emerged in August 22 following the killing of a Palestinian man by Israeli forces. Anti-Netanyahu rallies are being held on a weekly basis, with protesters not caring about what is happening to the Israelis in the occupied land, but rather taking aim at a prime minister who is indicted on grave charges and is willing to evade laws to do whatever he can. All in all, point to a situation where things are pulling the Israeli cabinet apart and move the regime to an ultimate annihilation.
In an article published on Responsible Statecraft, it is said that the U.S. role in Ukraine has slowly escalated since the beginning of the war there almost a year ago, saying the question now is how far Washington is willing to go. When the U.S. involves itself in a conflict, it often finds it difficult to get itself out. For instance, it happened in Vietnam. The U.S. military advisors helping the South Vietnamese fight Viet Cong forces eventually became U.S. soldiers fighting an American war. Or in Afghanistan, an initial invasion under the pretext of fighting Al-Qaeda terrorists morphed into 2 decades of war and destruction that resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of Afghans. The same scenario could be unfolding in Ukraine. Less than a month into the Ukraine war, the US President Joe Biden stated that the US and NATO allies would not fight Russia in Ukraine. However, little by little, Washington and NATO are creeping closer to the catastrophic scenario Biden had described as World War III. Biden had also claimed the U.S. troops will not be sent to Ukraine to take part in the conflict. However, several current and former American intelligence officials told The Intercept back in October that there is a much larger presence of both CIA and U.S. special operations personnel in Ukraine than there was when the war began, saying they are conducting clandestine American operations in the country that are now far more extensive. An 8-year Army Special Operations veteran, who is now an investigative journalist, reported in December that among those covert operations is the CIA's work with an unnamed NATO allies spy agency to carry out sabotage operations within Russia. Reportedly, the cause of the unexplained explosions that have rocked Russian infrastructure throughout the war. Meanwhile, the United States and its NATO allies have serially blown past their own self-imposed lines over arms transfers. At the start of the war, analysts cautioned that the overt supply of even small arms and light weaponry risks encouraging a wider war and possible retaliation from Moscow, while U.S. officials ruled out more advanced weaponry as too escalatory. It took less than 2 months for the Biden administration to start sending these more risky tranches of high-powered arms. By the end of May, it was sending advanced rocket systems. In addition, NATO arms transfers have now escalated well beyond what governments had worried just months ago could draw the alliance into direct war with Russia, with the US and European governments now sending armored vehicles and planning to send tanks. Russia has warned the United States against its planned delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Anatoly Antonov, Russia's ambassador to the United States, has described the move as a blatant provocation against Moscow. He accused Washington of purposefully trying to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. The warning came before the U.S. announced the delivery of dozens of its main battle tanks to Ukraine. Two American officials have been quoted as saying that the timeline of any potential delivery remains unclear and could take months or even years. Washington has said previously that providing Abrams tanks to Ukraine is not feasible, citing difficulties in training and maintenance. Meanwhile, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has decided to send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and to allow other countries such as Poland to send the same tanks from their own stockpiles to Kyiv. Until now, Berlin had been hesitant to send the Leopards or to allow other nations that have them in their possession to transfer them to Kyiv, with reports early last week saying that Germany would agree to do so only if the US provided its own tanks. The decision by the US to send its Abrams seems to have provided the political cover that Berlin had been seeking. Ukrainian officials have said the tanks would be a game-changer on the battlefield. The country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has called for a large number of tanks to repel Russian attacks.
Today, by the way, there's a lot of talk about tanks, about modern tanks that we need, and about the way this shortfall can be filled. A lot of efforts, words, promises. But it is important not to lose sight of reality. It is not about 5 or 10 or 15 tanks. The need is larger.
Zelensky said that Ukraine's allies have the required number of tanks to strengthen the country's defense against Russia. Since the beginning of the war, Ukraine's allies have sent Kyiv tens of billions of dollars worth of weapons. Western countries have also imposed a slew of economic sanctions on Moscow. Now, by escalating their support for Ukraine's military, the US and NATO have created an incentive structure for Moscow to take a drastic, aggressive step to show the seriousness of its own red lines.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وجل فرج.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Here again we are with some of the students of Xavier International School, Brother Hussein Ruhullah, Brother Ali Nasir, and Fawad Haider, and also Hassan Nasrullah. So today, inshallah, we are going to work on Ayah 265 of Surah Al-Baqarah on page 45. So brothers and sisters, thank you so much for being with us again. Go to page 45 of Surah Al-Baqarah. So brothers and sisters, please hold your Quran, turn to page 45, Surah Al-Baqarah, Ayah 265, sorry. So, inshallah, before we start, we're going to listen to the recitation of this ayah once.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وَمَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمُ ابْتِغَاءَ مَرْضَاتِ اللَّهِ وَتَثْبِيتًا مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ كَمَثَلِ جَنَّةٍ بِرَبْوَةٍ أَصَابَهَا وَابِلٌ فَآتَتْ أُكُلَهَا ضِعْفَيْنِ فَإِنْ لَمْ يُصِبْهَا وَابِلٌ فَطَلٌّ وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ.
That was nice recitation. Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir, you will be inshallah listening carefully and repeating after me, okay? Now, our brothers and sisters as well will inshallah try to practice with us. Are you ready?
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
ومثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم ابتغاء مرضات الله وتثبيتا من أنفسهم
ومثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم ابتغاء مرضات الله وتثبيتا من أنفسهم
كمثل جنة بربوة أصابها وابل
وتثبيتا من أنفسهم كمثل جنة بربوة أصابها وابل
كمثل جنة بربوة أصابها وابل فآتت أكلها ضعفين
كمثل جنة بربوة أصابها وابل فآتت أكلها ضعفين
فإن لم يصبها وابل فطل
فآتت أكلها ضعفين فإن لم يصبها وابل فطل
والله بما تعملون بصير
والله بما تعملون بصير
أحسنتم ما شاء الله Thank you so much Allah bless you inshallah So, in the previous ayah, last session, an example was given, the example of those who donate for the sake of people, not for the sake of Allah, yes? In order to make the people see them, yes? See them, oh, look, I'm donating, yes? When they are alone with themselves, they do not donate. When there are someone with themselves, with them, okay, they donate, yes? It's just because of the people. So Allah Almighty gave an example. What was the example? The example was this. كَمَثَلِ صَفْوَانٍ Like what? Like a sand, a rock, sorry, like a rock on the top of that rock. So people, for example, whenever people want to plant something, so there will be some soil, yes? They put the seeds, okay, they plant them, yes?
Yes.
They might grow.
Yeah.
But on the top of a rock, if someone puts some soil, okay, and plants, does it grow or no?
No.
It doesn't grow. Yeah. Allah Almighty gave the example like this. Those who donate to or give charity, okay? The example. And they do it for the sake of the people. To make the people see them, not for the sake of Allah. So there will be no reward for them. It will be like this. They plant on a rock. And when the wind comes, okay? It washes away all of them. There will be no... what do we say? Products for them. Yes? They will have no planting. They will have no products. Yes? Nothing. Zero. So their example was like this. Now Allah Almighty gives the example of those who donate, but for the sake of Allah Almighty. وَمَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ And the parallel and the example of those who spend their wealth seeking Allah's pleasure for the sake of Allah Almighty... And to confirm themselves, okay, to make sure their heart is getting more closer, much closer to Allah Almighty, okay? To fight the stinginess. You know stingy? People do not give others. It's mine, it's my. I have done a lot, okay, to achieve this much money, okay? I will not give a single penny to anyone else, okay? A single coin, a single toman, okay, to anyone. This person is called a stingy person. Bakhil, we say. He has the sifa of bukhl. Yes? And you should fight this. You should be able to donate to charity. Yes? Allah Almighty will, inshallah, compensate it. Okay. Now, the mathal, the example of those who yunfiquna, those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah Almighty and for they are seeking Allah's pleasure. كَمَثَلِ جَنَّةٍ is like a garden on a hillside, on a small mountain. like a jannah, like a garden on a mountain. Okay, asabaha wabilun, even like the wind strikes it, okay, hits it, but it grows, it grows and grows.
يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ.
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
Now we'll move on to the tajweed rules. The pronunciation of the letters here. مثا فا مثلول لذينا. The letter ثا ذال. Help me. ينفقون أموال لهم ها ابتغاء غين ا همزه مرضى ضاد مرضات الله ها تثبيتا ثا اها من انفسهم ا همزه اند ها نيكست وان كمثل للفا جنه بربوه واو از امبورتنت دو نوت سي ف بربوه وي دونت هاف ف ان عربيك. We have wa, wa, wa. What? We don't say what, yes? What? That wa sound, W sound. Asabaha sad, right? And ha. Wabilun fa'atat ukulaha, the letter ha. Dhi'faini, dad, dad, dhi'faini. Fa'illam yusibha, sad and ha. Wabilun fa'tal, ta. Ta, yes, for what? Ta. Wallahu.
Lam.
Ha. Yeah, lam is important as well. Ha is also well important. Bima ta'amaluna. Ayn. Basir.
Saad.
So these letters are very, very much important. Now, we will explain some other tajweed rules which are important. Wa mathalu alladhina. ينفقون the first rule
إدغام
or إخفاء
مثل
الذين ينفقون مثل yes you join them it's إدغام of course
مثل.
Yeah. لام with لام إدغام yes you're right for what ينفقون
إخفاء
hide the sound of نون why because fa is there. Fa is from the rest of the letters. There were four groups of letters. So, idhar, group. The group of letters for durul idhar, for durul idgham, for durul iqlab, and for durul ikhfa. So, fa is from the ikhfa group, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Fa, qaf, kaf, jim,
sin,
shin, sad, dal, dal, za. So, these are the letters. Yes, these are the letters that we apply the rule ikhfa. We hide the sound of the noon when they one of these letters come after the tanween or noon sakin. Yunfiquna mathalu alladhina yunfiquna right? Amwalahum actually mim is sakin. Okay? But you join it with ibtigha which has hamzatul wasl. You skip Hamzatul Wasr, you join Amwalahum with Ibtigha, yes? Amwalahum Ibtigha. We had a rule in Tajweed that the word Hum, Kum, Tum, they are Sakin. The last letter, Mim, is Sakin. But when you want to join with another word which starts with Hamzatul Wasr, you put a Dhamma on the top of Mim and join it. We had a rule, yes?
Yes.
Yes. أموالهم ابتغاء مب با قلقلة مبتغاء مرضات الله مرضات الله ضاد pronounce it with a heavy sound ابتغاء but this wajib right for what? He's looking for the hamza huh?
No,
it's not wajib good but that's wrong
yes
I did not say Izdamad wajib.
Yes.
Because Hamza and Alif Mad are in the same word. Ibtigha'a. That's one word. Mardat is another word. Ibtigha'a. One word. Mardat, another word. So, it's wajib. Prolong it for six counts. Mardat. Mardatillahi. Why the letter lam in the word Allah is pronounced lightly?
Because before it is a kasra.
Before the word Allah, we have a kasra sound. If we have a fatha or a dhamma sound, you pronounce it with a la sound. La, yeah. La.
Heavily.
Yes. Ibtigha'a mardatillahi wa tathbitan min anfusihim. Tathbitan, tanween plus meme. Merge them, idgham. Tathbitan min anfusihim. Min, nun sakin plus hamza.
Idhar.
Idhar. Clearly read the noon without any merging, without any changing, without any nasal sound. Min. The next noon sakin is not clearly pronounced. Yes. Ikhfa, hide the sound. Min anfusihim. Hussein, read these three words. Watathbitan min anfusihim.
Watathbitan min anfusihim.
Min anfusihim. Fast. Watathbitan min anfusihim.
وَتَثْبِيتًا مِّنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ
أحسنتم أحسنتم ما شاء الله. Okay. كَمَثَلِ جَنَّةٍ. Here, إِقْلَاب. جَنَّةٍ تَنْوِين plus بَه. Yes, إِقْلَاب. جَنَّةٍ بِرَبَوَةٍ أَصَابَهَا وَابِلٌ. So, إِخْفَى, we have too many إِخْفَى. Remember, وَابِلٌ فَ. After wabilun tanween, we have fa, it's ikhfa, of course. فَآتَتْ أُكُلَهَا ضِعْفَيْنِ فَإِنْ لَمْ فَإِنْ لَمْ. Nun sakin plus lam? Huh?
Idgham.
Idgham, yes. فَإِنْ لَمْ, join them. فَإِنْ لَمْ يُصِبَ. Ba, ba, here. Ba is sakin. يُصِبَ هَا
قَلْقَلَ.
قَلْقَلَ. MashaAllah, Fawad, you're a master of tajweed. يُصِبَهَا وَابِلٌ فَطَلْ. قِلَى tells you it's better to stop here. وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ. That's all, brothers and sisters. We mentioned all the important tajweed rules so far in this ayah. Please make sure you practice them well and stay with IRIB English Radio in the coming sessions as well. So, Brother Ali Nasir, Fawad, Hassan, and Hussein, thank you so much for joining us today. We will be here with our brothers and sisters in the coming sessions. See you. Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to several international schools for cooperation. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil faraj.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.